Hello, and welcome back to the Next Sense Institute. After a year's hiatus, my name's Trudy Smith, and I am your podcast host. I am the manager of continuing professional education at the Next Sense Institute. As I said, we've had a little bit of a hiatus. We took a year off, and we thought, what are we going to come back and talk about? And I think something that's really on everybody's mind at the moment, particularly in midst the Royal Commission and the NDIS review, I think advocacy is incredibly important. And so I'm so delighted today to have our very first host back in 2024, Robin McKenzie. Welcome. Could you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Thank you, Trudy. I'm a woman in my 50s. I'm legally blind since the age of 8. I have juvenile macular degeneration, although the community that's listening today are probably more aware of specifically of some eye conditions. So I specifically have Stargardt's. And as I've aged, my vision has deteriorated quite a bit. So I use a white cane to get around. I use adaptive technology, a range of adaptive technologies. I use JAWS as my main screen reader, do a little bit of NVDA. And I read Braille, and I have a Braille display. I learned Braille when I was in my 20s because the education policy of the day back in the 70s was if you had any usable vision, you were taught to read print, and it didn't matter how large the print was. And just as I got older, the print had to get bigger and bigger, and the paper size had to get bigger and bigger, and I really learned to smell paper and print, and sometimes got paper cuts on my hands and my nose as a result. So it was it wasn't until I was an adult when I thought, when I got involved in Blind Citizens Australia, which is the national organisation of people who are blind or vision impaired, and it's a significant organisation that does a lot of individual but also systemic advocacy on behalf of people who are blind or vision impaired. And whenever I'd go to their events, the best speakers were the ones that were reading Braille. They could maintain posture, maintain gaze with the audience, and could just speak more confidently because they could refer to information, whereas the low vision people that were print dependent were reading the paper close, it would bang on the microphone, the voice would be muffled, or if they weren't trying to read off notes, they were trying to memorise things or have these big, you know, place card holders to make certain points. And I thought, that's just not professional. And the person must feel stressed in those moments, and having to hold a lot of things in your memory, especially if it's statistics or facts, just not good. So that was my motivation when I was in my 20s to learn Braille. And so even though I read and use Braille every single day, and I have a Braille Sense and also a Braille display that I use with my laptop, I so rely and depend on Braille, but I'm not as fluent as I could have been if I'd learnt it when I was 5 or 6, or I was 7 when I was first diagnosed with my vision impairment. So even though we're not talking necessarily about Braille advocacy today, I'm a big advocate for anyone with low vision having really good use of their adaptive technology tools, and ideally to have some exposure to Braille because it's such a good method for note-taking and quick referencing. But just back to my history, a little bit about me, mentioning BCA, I am a former CEO of Blind Citizens Australia back in the 2007 through to 2012. And then I've done a lot of work since then in working with disability organisations, mainly doing systemic advocacy. And now I'm starting my practice as a career development practitioner, or back in the old days it was called a career counsellor, wanting to start my own practice and specialise in working with people who are blind or vision impaired, because that's obviously my area of interest and an area that I feel confident in. So I'm looking at getting the business properly getting off the ground next year, as I've just completed my postgrad qualifications in career counselling, which I really enjoyed. Oh, so that's a bit of a snapshot about me.
Absolutely. Thank you. And there's so many places I want to land in what you've just said. But I suspect my next question is really about your experiences as an advocate for yourself. And We can start as when you were seven, but I'm really also interested in your experiences through postgraduate study, advocating
Oh,
yourself.
yes.
So you can choose
I
where you want to start about how your experience as an advocate for yourself.
yeah. Well, I was thinking before the interview of the best story to tell, and it's a relatively recent one where I applied for a loan to buy a house, and I'd previously had a loan to buy my apartment, and now I was wanting to upgrade to a house. And I was working, making a good salary. I've traveled the world on my own and with friends and with sighted people and with blind people. I was the CEO of an organization. So clearly I had some skills. And when the loans officer was processing my loan and they gave, they authorized the loan, but they said it's conditional on we need to get a letter from your lawyer stating that you understand the terms of the contract because you can't read the contract yourself. We have to read it out to you and you have to sign it to say that you agree to the terms. So we need an authorized legal person to tell us that you are of sound mind and understand the conditions. And I was furious because, and this is why I mentioned that I'm world traveled, et cetera, because I said to her verbally, I said, I was very calm but furious. And I said, so you mean to tell me that with all of the skills and life experience that I've had, that I now need to pay a $600 fee to my lawyer so that he can just say, Robin can think for herself and can understand someone reading out a contract to her. I said, if that's what I'm required to do, then I require you to pay me the $600 for the lawyer fee. She was taken aback and she said, I'll take that to my manager. Long story short, I then had to put that all in writing and really clearly state the reasons why this was discriminatory, it was ignorant, it was going to be something that was going to be cost prohibitive to me and unreasonable. Well, within an hour of me sending it to her and her passing it on to her manager, I got a letter saying I didn't have to get a lawyer to say that I could think and read for myself. So,
Oh, insane, isn't it? It's unbelievable.
it's in this day and age, well and truly, once the Disability Discrimination Act has been well and truly in place, and all sorts of mechanisms and legal instruments have been put in place about the capacity of people who are blind to be able to access information. So yeah, it was really frustrating. But that's where I turned my anger directly into something constructive rather than just get a bit pouty and comply. So that's one example. But another example too, that's once I'd actually been working in as an advocate too. And so I knew the power of the written word because it's one thing to verbally have a discussion with someone, but who knows where that goes. But the power of a written letter that's clearly stated, that has arguments in it, that can be circulated to the person who you're having the conflict with, right up to the CEO of the company. So I knew the power of a good, well-constructed letter. But other incidents too, where sort of some more light-hearted ones. I used to fly a lot for my job when I was the CEO of BCA. I'd fly internationally and nationally, and so often people with a disability are boarded first on the plane, and are exited last. And that's not actually about our need. It's about what's comfortable for the service provider,
Yes,
the
absolutely.
airline. But there was this one time, and also when you pre-board, you then do have a bit more time to get yourself oriented to your seat and everything around you. So I do prefer that. And you get a bit of one-on-one time with your flight attendant. And this one time, this flight attendant, was giving me the whole safety announcement, which I've heard 1,000 times. And then she said, oh, just by the way, how much can you see? And I said, oh, well, I just blurry blobs. I can see silhouettes and blurry blobs. And I always used to make the joking statement, so everybody's beautiful to me because I don't see wrinkles or zits or
Oh,
blemishes or...
I love that.
And she was delighted. So she said, "Oh, so you think I'm beautiful?" And she's saying to her colleagues, "Oh, this lovely lady's saying I'm beautiful." And I thought, "Well, no, I'm not." I
Not
was just,
singular.
that's right. And so then she did this thing, and I don't know if this is too naughty for the podcast, but she said, "Oh, so you can't really see the detail." And she said, "I've had a bit of work done," and she grabbed both my hands and put them on her breasts. I've never felt fake breasts before. And I said, and I like immediately moved my hand because I didn't know that was what was going to be happening. I immediately moved my hands and I said, "It would have been nice if you'd asked me if I'd like
I'd like,
to."
wow. Let's talk about consent.
And so it's such a weird thing because I can be such an accommodator in my personality. So I didn't want to be offending her, but I wasn't offended, but I was just surprised and shocked. And so I thought, yeah, this is a time to teach this lady that yes, consent is probably something that you should seek when when we're working with someone with a vision impairment or with anybody, frankly.
Yes, and I don't know. Was she hoping to get a tax deduction with that vision? I love the way that all of your stories, Robin, come back to an opportunity to teach, and I think that really speaks to where you're going in your future. You know, the issue with the bank, that bank is never going to ask somebody blind again for that lawyer's letter because of the way that you managed that. I suspect that whatever airline you were flying, she may have gone back and taught her colleagues that, somebody has a disability of any kind, consent is still very, very important. And it sounds like advocacy for in the community is a really important part of your life.
Absolutely, and I love your observation about teachable moments because I give a lot of public presentations, and one of the things I say quite frequently is right or wrong, fair or unfair. We as people who are blind or vision impaired, the minute we walk out our front door, we are educating the community about how to communicate and interact with us. And sometimes that is a pain in the butt, but that's c'est la vie, that's what it is. And so rather than seeing it as a task, see it as an opportunity. And so I frequently do. And of course, using a bit of humor is such a good lubricant and can make you more accessible to someone as well. So yes, I think a good part of the equation of what makes good advocacy is absolutely seeing moments as educative and as moments that can teach you how to do something differently or better next time. And if you build that into your mindset, then you see it as something that you've got agency over. And let's face it, often people with disability don't feel a sense of agency. So it's good to be aware of what you can have control over. I'm also reminded of something that a manager said to me when I first was getting into working in the advocacy area. He said to me, "The best advocacy is a well asked question." And it's always stuck with me. Often the person who's asking the questions actually is the one that's in control. And you can steer things all sorts of ways when you place your question or when you phrase your question in the most appropriate way for the circumstance.
Is that, I think you probably touched a little bit on this, but why is advocacy so important?
Yeah, because that's such a good question, Trudy. Because even it's a little bit like dieting, or if you want to lose weight, we all know eat less, exercise more, eat less fat and sugar, and eat more protein and micronutrients, and you'll lose weight. But how many of us actually do that all the time, 24/7? So you can know the facts, you can know what's right, but you might not know how to do it, or you might not have the information about how to do it, or you might not have the incentive or the motivation, the right level of intention. And so advocacy can help people at its purest and simplest form. It can bring to the attention of the other person, the other entity. It can bring to their attention what's needed. So to use the flight attendant example, by making that statement about, oh, you know, whoops, I didn't know that was about to happen, rather than saying, how dare you do that? And you didn't get my consent, which I could have and could be in my rights to have said and done. But by couching it in a term that's a little more civil and a little bit more conciliatory, it would still have the same impact. Frankly, I think it has a better impact, because whenever you shame the other person, well, it's kind of almost a human instinct to then defend themselves.
Yep.
So so good advocacy helps people, is the act of giving information and then the added extra of, and now, how is that useful? How is that helpful? How can we make the change needed to make the situation better?
Absolutely, I love that. And you've already talked about, you know, the importance of a powerful question and coming at it from a conciliatory way. But is there other more specific advice that you've got for other people in your community considering this work?
Yes, yes. I think, you know, most of us who are visually impaired, who are maybe under the age of 50, have all been educated about our rights. We've all been educated about the Disability Discrimination Act, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, our various state and territory human rights and equal opportunity acts, etc. But I think a lot of us aren't necessarily aware of, with rights come responsibilities. And you can know what your rights are and you can assert for them, but you've also got a responsibility. And again, back to that sort of education statement that I made earlier, part of that responsibility is bestowed upon us whether or not we want it the minute we walk out our front door. But our responsibility is to respect what our need is, but also respect that the whoever we're advocating to on our own behalf or on behalf of others, they need to be a little bit educated to come to that understanding. Again, that's too abstract. I'll be a bit more specific. If we're talking about someone feeling like they've been discriminated against, it's not enough to say, you've discriminated against me. Because in fact, by definition, the Disability Discrimination Act requires you to lodge a complaint. Mm. So when you lodge a complaint, you've then got to articulate your argument. You've got to state what element of the Disability Discrimination Act applies here. Then you've got to restate what the actual issue was. And then you've got to state what the outcome is that you're seeking. And so that's quite considered and deliberate and thinking that needs to be outlined. And then it's actually, in the case of an actual formal disability discrimination complaint, then it's actually up to the Human Rights Commission to determine if your complaint meets the criteria of the Act, and then they'll make the determination that discrimination occurred. So just to say, I've been discriminated against, is a bit of a leap in those formal steps. So that's a specific example around a legislative instrument. But most advocacy doesn't happen at that higher lodge a complaint level. Most advocacy happens at a day-to-day level, you know, the flight attendant with consent, the bank loans officer that wants you to sign a letter, the walking down the street and a sighted person bumping into the blind person because their head's in their iPhone because they've got to attend to important Facebook business while they're walking down the street. You know, it's those kinds of things where we're doing, having to advocate for ourselves on a daily basis. And again, my advice is always be civil, but be clear about what the outcome is that you're seeking. And so that's the responsibility that comes with having the right to have your needs met. And also, just because I've got rights as a person who is blind doesn't mean that my rights supersede your rights as a person who is sighted. You know, there's got to be that understanding that we're in a world together, and we all have rights and we all have responsibilities.
And those teachable moments make all the difference. And as you say, we don't know what we don't know. And so when you know better, you do better.
Yes.
By coming at it from an educational frame, or let me teach you why this is so important, it means that the path is smoother for blind people coming behind you.
Yes, yes. And the other thing too is, you know, in answer to a prep question that you gave me before the podcast, about, you know, why what got me into advocacy and why I do advocacy, I think that not everybody is capable of being their own best advocate, and so that teachable moments comment, but also we have to build capacity of those around us through modelling, through talking, through podcasts, through you know, speaking out on email forums. Those kinds of things show our, you know, speaking specifically about my vision impaired peers, it shows my vision impaired peers how things could be done. But also it creates a community of shared experience, because it can be lonely when you're feeling like you're always having to advocate for your needs all the time. It can feel lonely when you're feeling like you're the outlier in the community. And so part of the bigger picture for me of advocacy is being a part of a community that helps and supports each other to improve the conditions within which we're operating.
That is a beautiful way to finish. I feel like I could talk to you forever about this, Robin, but I will thank you so much for your time. I feel like we're going to have to bring you back and talk more about the career work that you're doing.
I would love to.
I think that we've, like I said, there are many, many things that I wanted to continue to talk to you about. But look, thank you. I think this is an amazing way to have started the conversation about advocacy. So thank you for being our first guest of 2024. It's great to have you with us. And we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you so much, Trudy. I've enjoyed the chat.
Thanks, everyone. And we will look forward to talking with you again next week.